Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are on the eve of America's solar return, but it's also a Pluto return. So, yes, I celebrated that by going to the dentist for some deep drilling of corruption being removed from my teeth. And as I always say, you know, in my body and the body politic. And the dentist goes, yeah, we're all for that. So it is right now, just to situate ourselves, we are after the new moon in Cancer, and to remind us, the solstice, which is the time of the incarnation of Big Mama, and we looked then and go, well, where was the moon on the solstice? In Aries, or with Jupiter, with stories. It's the woofy woman summer, right? It's time to be aroused and to pluck ourselves up. We have much that would be discouraging if we were not something, tricksters, there we go. As David Grimes said long ago when I was on the floor, I think it was after the second Bush election, and he goes, now, if we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough. I'm like, thank you, I needed that. So right now, you know, the moon is soaring overhead of Berkeley in Cancer. You know, it's the new moon after the solstice, so even more, much on our table. And the moon is opposite Pluto, right? So it is our assignment. There's descriptions and assignment. The description, of course, is the war on life is just continues. But our assignment is to tease Moon Cancer, again, sane, reverent, common sense and tending to each other, housing, food, wazza-wazza. It's Br'er Rabbit time again. There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate. That's what we're doing now. Just like there ain't been no hard times. Like there ain't been no falling out. Ooh, like they all remembered they were kin. So to honor, I call it, the scrotus scotus. Remember, the title for the former guy was scrotus, so-called ruler of the United States. So it's the scrotus scotus, horrific decisions and more that we want to put on our work table and pluck ourselves up. So more than perfectly, I'm so grateful for America's plutonic solar return. We welcome longtime political spiritual ally Pat Ewing, Patricia Ewing, leadership mentor, sustainable energy guide, political strategist, yes, that we may pluck ourselves up somehow and address all these things as well as the really super pretty great hearings. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. It's always a pleasure.
That's great, and I'm so grateful that you are, as I'm skidding in from dental work, everything real, everything symbolic. Okay, deep drilling, There we go. So much on our table, but we are equally enthused about the hearings as truly Jupiter cathartic storytelling, and we remember Saturn accountability. And in fact, in our chart right now over Berkeley, 17 plus Libra is rising, which is men placed under arrest is the image for that degree. You know, accountability. We go, right. Accountability is the sine qua non for democracy. But I'm glad to hand the baton to and fro to you, because I have experienced, you know, we all have moods, right? Just like, oh, overwhelming discouragement. No, here we are. That's why we gather here, right? So yes, shall we look at the Supreme Court's latest assault on life today?
Sure. Is that where you want to start, or you want to start with the January 6th hearings?
Ah, right. They're all interwoven. Okay, horrific decision to one side, and we start with the January 6th hearings.
Yeah, because, and I want to get to what the Supreme Court is up to. On the January 6th hearings, what is fascinating about them is that we are, I don't use the word lucky, but it's serendipitous that they turned out to be structured the way they've been structured. Normally, what would happen is you'd have, you know, a line of Democrats and Republicans, and then they would go, they'd each get 5 minutes. So it would be 5 minutes of lauding somebody who's the witness, and then 5 minutes of attacking them. 5 minutes of lauding them, 5 minutes of attacking, depending on what the issue was and who was in front of them. And in this setting, we, because of McCarthy, decided not to actually participate, and Liz Cheney and crew were able to actually put on a fulsome hearing. They actually were able to go after facts and then put those facts forward in an organized fashion. And I find it fascinating that we're in a time period in which organized facts that not just create a narrative, but a solid story, a narrative that allows us to see the truth, is like a tonic. It's you want to see this, you want to hear this, you want to know this, because they have taken such pains to, and such time and attention to giving us an opportunity to unweave what actually had been taking place in this White House, who just went crazy. You know, how they ever thought that. Here's what I was asking. I was asking some friends, and I still don't have an answer to this. What Trump decided that he was going to himself go to the Congress with armed people and be lead a resurrection as if he was, you know, a general, you know, in front of D-Day. What did he think was going to happen? Like, what is the other half of that story when he got there? Did he think he was going to arrest the vice president? Did he think that his other members of Congress were going to show up and stand behind him with a bunch of Proud Boys? Like, we don't, what was actually going to happen? And what is fascinating about this process, by unpicking it piece by piece, by meticulous piece, and going, you know, having 1,000 different people they've interviewed and going through all this material and putting it together for us in a way in which we can digest it, it offers us an opportunity to put it to rest. It offers us an opportunity to move beyond it once we understand the lesson.
Right. Yeah, well, Trump, not a long-term thinker, but the committee is very, yes, as somebody who crafts stories and is always
that.
Like...
That is, I don't agree with that.
Okay, good.
I think one thing we've learned about this entire thing with Donald Trump and what's been going on this January 6th hearing, here's what I want someone to do. I want someone on the hearings, and I want them to put it on their website, is to do a comprehensive timeline. Everything, mm-hmm. When I say comprehensive, you know, the electors, getting the fake electors happened on this date, and here's what happened in between when, you know, Cassidy Hutchinson was talking to Cipollone, and put it all in one timeline. Because what you will see, and I think what we're seeing out of these hearings, is unbelievable planning. Think about how much planning it took to foment a rebellion. Give Trump too much credit to say, we give him too much of a buy of a pass when we say, oh, he's so weird and he's so this. And no. This was months of planning.
No, you're right. Even as I said it, I knew I was wrong. Thank you very much. So, yeah, the cunning, and what did he think was going to happen? Well, we don't know. But I want to just bring up the model of possession, right? And we're both, you know, a little bit acquainted or reacquainted fans of Terry Pratchett's book, I Shall Wear Midnight, in which the cunning man has come to town and created mob mind. And mob mind, you know, is just a group mind that invites the worst of people. And we can all, the wonderful young girl witch says, you know, we can all feel that when we say, I don't know what got into me. I don't know why I said that mean thing, you know. And we all, it's collective group mind. So just to remind ourselves, team, the purpose of ritual magic, and radio is ritual magic, is to spiral into collective group mind, expanded wisdom, an expanded repertoire of liberating responses, you know, there we go, so that when things are in that, you know, that there's more available to everyone you know, to respond to. But yeah, and so the young girl witch's task is to dissolve, kind of backstage, which is also very radio, to dissolve the grip of cunning, you know, con, you know, mob mind, right?
And how does she do that? She does it by jumping into the fire. She jumps into the fire. And she marries.
Thank you.
The masculine and the feminine, which doesn't have to be a man and a woman, but she marries the masculine and the feminine together while with them jumping into the fire. Not out of the fire, not around the fire, not into a lake. So sometimes going
That's
into
great.
The fire, which is what I think, from my standpoint, the January 6th hearings are doing. They're going into the fire, and they're seeing, they're giving us a glimpse of the truth. And that is why I think this is a part of our healing process, is needed. I needed this. I think we all need to see some of this.
Yes, that's really great. And so overhead right now in Berkeley and all of Northern California, hello, there is the moon in Cancer, and tonight will be lovely. We'll see the little crescent of the new moon after sunset, just a little crescent there, a little bit of hope. And the moon squares Mars, the fire in Aries. But Mars's image, and it's right on top of KPFA's sun, is through imagination, lost opportunities are regained. And then Mars squares Pluto. It's what's called a cardinal T-square, going, all right, there's volatility, there's danger. How do we derive from many sources, including Terry Pratchett, you know, who does say, you know, genius is always sleeting through the universe until it finds a receptive molecule. It's like Shakespeare or inspired leadership. Right, there we go. And it does bring the model of possession, which I find a useful metaphor without getting all tripped out and outsourcing authority and everything, but that idea of possession. So I've always viewed the former guy as possessible, you know, and so when you say what did he think was going to happen, it's like I think he was possessed by the spite and hunger, just as one kind of cartoon image, you know. But yeah, he was that's so clear. And you actually watched the whole thing. I just saw snippets of Liz Cheney addressing, you know, the Republicans who are in what state? Repenting themselves?
Oh,
no, what are you? I'll hand it to you because you watched
Library.
The whole thing.
Yeah,
oh, thank you.
At the Reagan Library. Yeah. She was at the Reagan Library.
Right. And the quality of her sobriety was what?
She was, I'm just, well, I want to give you a couple quotes that she said,
yeah.
Because I think it is indicative. To the little girls and to the young women who are watching tonight, these days, for the most part, men are running the world, and it's really not going all that well. I appreciated that. I thought that was just,
yeah,
you know, a really nice way to sort of put one of the pieces that I think is, you know, really important as far as her putting some of this in context. She also put it directly in her speech. Why it was important for Republicans to wake up and to, as you would say, you know, release their own selves from the mob mind, and why you cannot believe in the Constitution and also support Donald Trump. And this is a woman who is losing her race by, what, 20 points right now? So everything she's saying is to her own political detriment. So here's the quote. The reality that we face today as Republicans, as we think about the choice in front of us, we have to choose. Because Republicans cannot be both loyal to Donald Trump and loyal to the Constitution. So she's go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and then the Republican audience applauded.
Very much so.
They did all.
Yeah, absolutely. They gave her a standing ovation. And the reason I brought up the quote about the young girls as well and the young women is that if what you see out of Trump world is between Liz Cheney, between Kathy Hutchinson, between others, it's usually the women within Trump world who are the ones who are actually speaking the truth. And I think that's a nice, it's fascinating sort of, you know, it's the old men who are sitting there and the old white guys sitting there who are, no, this didn't happen. That, no, I'm taking the fifth over and over and over and over again. And one interesting thing we found out today is that most of these young people, including her, their lawyers are paid for by Trump.
Right.
So this woman, Kathy Hutchinson, actually went to another former Trump person, a woman who had gotten out of the cult, and said, I think I have more to say and I don't know what to do. Because the Trump lawyer directed her testimony initially. And so then this woman got her in touch with Liz Cheney, and she got a new lawyer. So Kathy Hutchinson, the central piece of this is she had to get a whole new lawyer in order to make this happen. And that's how they got the additional testimony. So all the way around, you see Trump's sort of fingers in manipulating all of these pieces. And it's absolutely fascinating. And that's why I bristle when someone says, oh, he's a weirdo or he's, you know, crazy or he's nutty. No, he's thinking through everything. He's saying to, you know, the young 22-year-old who worked at the White House, well, you know, I know you can't afford an attorney and these terrible people are forcing you to testify. Let me take care of that for you. And then that's right. a Trump lawyer.
Right. So, you know, that's right. So the cunning man. So there's that. And yeah, and great what you bring up, that it's the women who were in the Trump cult that it just went too far, right? They were like, for the men, but they didn't speak out. You know, they are quoted by the women narrators. So it is, you know, it is all kind of like a tarot card. And in some way, you know, it is, you know, we're all in this dream together. And many people note, you know, how trippy it is to have, you know, Liz Cheney, you know, just from the Cheney family of Dementors, you know, but rising to this moment in the mystery play, you know, playing a role. And so, yes, let's put that on the table because we want to go to and fro the hearings. And sure. Then I just want to bring up the power of language, you know, the power of language has just left me because Mercury squaring Neptune. There we go. The power of language. I'm sure there's. Oh yes, right. It's the thing I always bring up from Dion Fortune. You know, employed by the British government in World War II with the ritualists to help protect Britain from the Nazi invasion, and I think you know contributed to the thing. But she did say. I always quote this, but I want to bring it alive again now. She said. It was crucial to our work to maintain an atmosphere of tranquility in our home deliberative realms. Otherwise, how could we have hoped to have been a nucleus of stability for the nation's soul? And I found that just so interesting, you know, vocabulary upgrade, anything for which we have a word, we have a relationship going, the nation's soul, I mean, it is the nation's birthday. It is the nation's solar return with Pluto. We can shapeshift and use many words and stuff, but we'll go for the nation's soul in some way. You know, it's deep. You know, mission unmet, but embodied in so many symbols. You know, the Great Seal of the United States. You know, the top of the pyramid is not down because they knew it was incomplete. You know, and the nation's soul. Well, it is. It is, you know, how to assume narrative lead, which the hearings certainly are. And then, as you say, Liz Cheney is losing her race. But it's all very fluid, though, don't you think? It's very like, ooh, there's no certainty, right? Anything could happen,
oh,
and that's
I'm
why
not
we...
Oh, I'm not saying she's going to. No, that wasn't even my point. My point was is that she was willing to put herself in that position with Benny Thompson, with you know, in order to run these hearings. And that's jumping into the fire, right? So she doesn't know the outcome. She doesn't know if she's going to get burned. She doesn't know if she's coming out the other side. But she's willing to jump into the fire. And she's willing to, because she believes in what she's doing. And I think that's insane with Adam Kinzinger. And what I love about these hearings, too, is that I'm going to use Saturn. It's the art of Saturn, right? So what I learned from them is that Saturn actually has art. I think of Saturn differently. I think of Saturn as, you know, can rules and regulation, but there's actually, this is art, and it's the art of structure of how things actually happened and unwinding things in order to find the bottom truth. And I just find that fascinating.
Right. And then just for the fun of it, Saturn, we're here to give Saturn a good name. Saturn is in all of us, our capacity to dedicate and define. It is exalted in Libra, meaning boundaries and accountability are good for love and harmony and beauty in any relationship. And right now it is in the sky doing many things, you know, it is trining Mercury for all of us. You know, may we be a responsible voice for collective well-being. What I found so poignant, you know, and you can help to move us all forward here, Pat Ewing, our great ally guest, is the sense of like, whoa, what is for each one of us to define, well, what do we think, you know, government, what's our definition of what government's meant to do? You know, and everybody really encouraged to do that. It's part of our civics thing because it's part of our dynamic. But to serve a Saturn function of regulation and protection, to guide collective experiments on behalf, you know, that are dedicated to collective well-being. And now we get... We can to and fro, right, to the Supreme Court, right? And they're
exactly the place to put it.
Yeah, their exactly attack on regulations and Saturn and collective responsibility and dedication to collective well-being, and they're like, no, none of that, right?
Right.
That the EPA stripped.
Well, here's what I find interesting about what you said as well, and not the EPA, abortion, gone. I mean, the end of Roe v. Wade to me felt like a physical blow. And what they're doing is, if you're talking a democracy, and you know, here's my theory, so I'm going to give you one. If you're talking a democracy, we're all have to participate. And what's happened in our democracy is that we professionalized the House and the Senate, and when they can't agree, or the legal system can't agree, then it goes to the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court is so far above and away from all of us and in the day-to-day life that it's like on a mountain hill, right? Here's what the Supreme Court is doing. Screw it. We don't want that responsibility anymore. That's what they basically said. You know, we're tired of being your backdrop and your backstop. We're tired of making all these decisions that you refuse to make. So, House of Representatives, Congress, governors, you go for it. They are forcing the democracy, as you know, them being a backstop, and because we have basically, you know, given away our responsibility in some ways to the larger dynamic of being part of a body politic to these professional politicians. And again, that led to, they can't decide, so they go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is putting it back to you and me and everybody on this call. They're actually putting it back to us. And that is awful. In one sense, because their decisions are draconian for whether it's guns or women, but we have to use it as an opportunity. We don't really have a choice. We have to wake up to the fact that our votes actually are unbelievably important, and everything that's happening to us has been done to us out of their desire for us either not to pay attention or not counting their interest in us as people. And everything we do now sort of needs to be around taking that power back and sort of inhaling the inherent power of the individual who votes, who makes decisions, who is a part of their community, and moving from that. Because ultimately, we can have, you know, we can codify, the Congress can codify Roe v. Wade. Now, one of the misnomers, I just have to put this as a caveat, that people have about having a Democrat Senate and House. One of the things about this particular Democratic Senate is that their margin is too small. We didn't expect, Mitch McConnell assumed that he was going to stay the majority leader. He was supposed to stay the majority leader. The races that gave Schumer the majority were actually screwed up by Donald Trump in December of 2020, right? So they were, 20. So they were screwed up by Donald Trump, right? So they were not supposed to have won those races in Georgia. It just so happens we now have the Senate, but it's just not enough people in order to make the change that we need to make. But we can codify Roe v. Wade, and then all of a sudden these guys are like, okay, we're done. We're done. I mean, I understand they're right-wing nuts. I understand that these, especially the last three, were put on to the bench in a horrible way. Just rolled the American people and their interest. But frankly, the Democratic Party hasn't cared about Supreme Court ever. We've never organized around it. We've never organized well around state legislative stuff. We've only ever cared about the House, Congress, and the Senate. We care somewhat about governors. So we, you know, the Democratic Party as an organization and structure got caught short because the Republicans out-organized them on a local level, and it's still happening. So that's my thesis around the Supreme Court. That's my sort of way of dealing with it so that it could be good news.
Well, we want to do that, and we're going to take it. Well, in about 2 minutes, we'll take our little short musical break. But so we're going to stir the cauldron and come back for the noon Eastern Time appointment of Ketanji Jackson Brown to the Supreme Court, and that chart. What does that augure? I do turn to the astro mythology for supportive, underneath guiding for all of us. You know, to avail ourselves of all of our skills, power of vision, power of woofiness. I'm very fond of the meme that I hoovered, and I want to find the originator, but it's a very feisty Statue of Liberty blazing. She's jumping into the fire, right? And she's got, you know, appropriate use of expletives on her banner going, F this, right? And we go, and I find that so preferable to the, like, oh, the Statue of Liberty's drowning in water, you know, and women wearing the handmade tail. It's like, no, we don't have time for that. No. Jump into the fire. Yeah, exactly.
Well, look at Nancy Pelosi. Images. She got Nancy Pelosi is in Rome, and she got communion from the Pope. Right.
Uh-huh.
So she's refused communion in her home church. Because she's Catholic, and her local priest said no because you're not pro-life enough. So she goes to the Vatican and gets it from the Pope. That I like.
There's nuance about everything. If anything, Liz Cheney teaches us that. Going nuance, yes, terrible, good. Well, Nancy Pelosi, you know, is very Catholic and does talk about, you know, when John Lewis died, you know, she said, he's here with us now. I can see him. I believed her that she could say, you know, she's the only woman in political public life who has talked about spirituality without being, you know, hideously mocked like Hillary Clinton for, you know, wanting to commune with Eleanor Roosevelt. So that's very real. So a cool move, Nancy Pelosi, born with Algol rising, the beheading, and I love that her daughter was asked on a news show, do people know how, you know, ferocious she is? And her daughter said, Yes, she could cut off your head and you wouldn't even know you were bleeding, which is a perfect Al Gall, the fixed star beheading rising in her chart. But we're going to take our very short usual musical break here and come right back to put many things on our altar and stir the cauldron. Our longtime political spiritual ally guest is Pat Ewing, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our skookum guest today. Skookum, we are reminded by David Grimes that skookum means connected to the spirits and completely competent for the work at hand. Our skookum guest is Patricia Ewing, leadership mentor, sustainable energy guide. Yes, we'll come back to the Supreme Court and Bill McKibben's New Yorker essay. He really responds. He's a first responder, political, and Pat, political strategist, that we may pluck ourselves up. So here we are, plucking ourselves up, but fully aware. And, you know, as we to and fro, but go back to the Supreme Court and Ketanji Jackson Brown being inaugurated, really, you know, at noon today, it's very much the same chart as we have now to animate. It is the moon in Cancer, woofy women, square Mars, as you said, Pat, leaping into the fire to dissolve the cunning man and mob mind. And Mars's images through imagination, lost opportunities are regained. This is also the Ketanji Jackson Brown entering the Supreme Court. We go, and the moon does trine Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, power of symbolic language, seeing the desirable thing, seeing the woofy women, maybe a little more like South Africa with the singing and the dancing and the wowsing and that is scary to tyrants and... I think of the 135-degree angle as an awareness of danger. So you'd mentioned, Pat, about, you know, Saturn. I love Saturn. I'm wedded to Saturn, you know, but we're here to give it a better name. It's associated, you know, even just superstitiously or even by astro scholars with kind of fear and depression. We go, no, that's a symptom of us having outsourced our Saturn, our authority, our capacity to dedicate and define and to take vows to sociopathic dingbats with no concern for collective well-being. So, again, the fate of the world, you know, requires us to all insource our Saturn, because otherwise it's dangerous, right? And for each, you know, to define what is wise governance, to define government function, to define... Well, the function of protecting the Commonwealth, I think, is a good... The purpose of government should be, or is, to protect the Commonwealth. It's like, could we all kind of woof with that? And we go, so let's dive into the danger of what just happened today in the Supreme Court. And it was right after Ketanji Jackson Brown. What a mean welcome party that was, right? What a mean welcoming day, going, here you are, and you're irrelevant. We go, not so fast. But the Supreme Court decision that Bill Kibben just wrote about, what is stripping the EPA of its regulatory power and other things too, yeah.
Absolutely. And just to riff on your Saturn piece for a second, one of the indications around the world of the rise of authoritarianism in a country is making abortion access illegal. That a rise of authoritarianism and abortion access are actually interdependent. Because if you can control a woman's reproductive cycle and you can control when she's having children, you'd lose your free society. So we need to really look at what it is, where we want to be our own author and where it's outsourced. And that also goes to the EPA decision. So here's what is so fascinating about this and why these, six, five, three, whatever they are, people. The reason there's an EPA is because they have a staff of tens of thousands, right? So what happened is the Congress, because a U.S. senator has a staff of 50, and that includes their state staff. The bigger the federal government got, because it actually had to support what was going on in the country, they're the experts. The EPA are the experts. These are people who aren't political. They don't care about politics. They get their PhDs, they get their masters, and then they're like, I'm going to go work in the federal government because I'm going to save the planet. And they get out, these are people who are dedicated and they are experts. And what the Supreme Court just did is cut off the expert access for understanding climate and its ability to impact the earth. I can't understand. No member of Congress wants to do what the EPA can do. They can't. They just can't. I mean, they have more staff dedicated to answering their mail they get than they could ever have in understanding EPA policy. It's just the way it is. So the question again is, and this is what I was saying to you backstage, Senator Markey from Massachusetts was saying, if we have to end the filibuster one thing at a time, whether it's for the EPA, whether it's for choice, whether it's, for climate change, whatever it is, and do it one thing at a time, he said, that's where I'm going. Because that's what we have to fix this. So the implication of this action, again, it is the Supreme Court saying, not my problem. I'm going to throw it back to Congress. Congress can make a law. Congress can make a law. We're going to stop legislating. And I think these people in their desire for, I don't know, their weird, Trump had this weird death cult of himself, right? I'm going to take down the entire government. These people are like, we're going to take down society and the world, right? So it's this weird death cult of not wanting positive change in the world. But in our democracy, within the structure of our democracy, it goes back to the House and the Senate. That goes back to you and I and everybody on this phone call, on this radio show, and what we can do to elect the people that we need to elect so that we can have the action that we need. So the House and the Senate and state reps, state senators, mayors, all of a sudden become way more important. They just become way more important.
And governors have always been and are even
governors.
More. Yeah.
Yeah,
and we do look to dedicated miracles. Texas Governor Beto would be a desirable miracle in terms of sane, reverent, common sense rising. And we go right. So the strategy, and I like Ed Markey. He goes back in a tradition of kind of New Dealers out of Massachusetts. He knew my dad way back. So again, it's so on the line, So he's kind of like old Massachusetts politicians in a sense. He feels that he received the baton from the likes of my dad. Who was. More radical than when I knew him. After he died, I found that my dad was a New Deal congressman under FDR long before I was born. But but a big enthusiast for fighting Bob La Follette, this Republican populist, prairie populist out of Wisconsin. And a lot of what FDR took into the New Deal was derived from fighting Bob La Follette, because Bob La Follette put the New Deal in place in Wisconsin first as a governor. And so, you know, and a Republican, there we go. But all, you know, for, you know, populism and take care of people and Social Security and, you know, and curb the corporations and corruption, you know, there we go. And I was looking at his chart, right? And because people's charts do respond even after they've gone. And he was born with, I think, Uranus at 18 Taurus. And Uranus will be at 18 Taurus this whole summer. And I get replenished and go, okay, fighting Bob La Follette, all the ancestors, you know, the ancestor strategy politicians who, you know, crossed borders, dissolved distinction between parties and did good for the community no matter what. And the Sabian symbol for 18 Taurus, which is for all of us, it's a new continent emerges out of the sea, you know, a resilience after crisis. And I go, oh, all right, yes, we're, you know, because it is redesign everything. I mean, you know, in the whole structure of how we tend to each other as an opportunity. So I'm putting fighting Bob La Follette on my ancestor altar, going, come on in, come on in. You know, and through imagination, lost opportunities are. I'm sorry, say what?
Oh, I said, come on in, water's warm.
Yes. Yeah. And then just, I'll kind of hand it to you, the to and fro of, you know, how do we deal with adversity, right? Just like,
I like to give you some good news.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you like what?
No, I like adversity, but you were going to give me some good news, and I step aside to hear good news.
Well, I work with localities, municipalities, in helping them to change to green energy, figure out how you make that bus electric instead of gas, how to run a courthouse with solar instead of oil, et cetera. Net zero housing, net zero construction. And it doesn't, I've never asked any of these localities what, I don't know usually whether they're Republicans or Democrats. And on the local level, they just want to make the change. Sometimes it's because the governor has set out, you know, here's your guidelines. Within, you know, the next 20 years, you have to do X, Y, Z. But even in that, the interest of the local government is positive. It is forward thinking. It is, well, wait a second, but if I, you know, create this solar farm in order to run our county jail and our courthouse, can I then add EV charging? Where would I put the EV charging? Well, you know what? If we put it at the hospital, the nurses can buy electric cars and then they can actually charge their cars while they're at work. So could we do that? So everything is, the conversation on the local level has been very positive from what I've seen. And it isn't just in blue places. It's sort of everywhere. And I've been very interested to see how, and that's my good news. My good news is when rubber meets the road, when you're talking about switching your energy over, the federal government, what they can do, Congress, Senate, but also the White House can do is offer the money to these locales to switch over. And that a lot of that money is already there. So it got sent to them from ARPA funds, which are funds that came from the COVID pandemic. Some of these localities are awash in monies right now, and they're trying to be creative. And my point in saying that is that we need to get involved at the local level on those issues. If you can actually have a huge impact by going and talking to your local county council person, et cetera, and or going to their meetings and listening to sort of what their plans are and proposing those plans, because guess what? The money's available. They have more money than they've ever known what to do with. They have money they don't understand what to do with. And whether it's solar or wind or whatever, you know, and blue hydrogen's coming down the pike. Whether it's the electric electrification of our highways, which the technology now is coming available, localities want to know. They want to know, and that's my good news.
And what is blue hydrogen?
Green hydrogen. I apologize. There's two kinds of hydrogen, blue and green.
Maybe blue is coming along. All right.
Yeah. Sorry about that. It's actually green is what we want. I apologize. Blue hydrogen is made with fossil fuels. Green hydrogen is not. So when someone says hydrogen as an alternative for a fuel source, which is better for the environment, we want green hydrogen. So I apologize for that. But there's entire groups of people who are working on right now how to create electric highways for the trucking industry so that a truck will never be gas fueled again. There's these fabulous, wonderful, juicy ideas that are happening, that are springing up in all over the country. And I think it would be fascinating and wonderful for people to be part of that.
Yes. No, and that fits in with adversity, right? Using it as incentive, you know, and just what you said, and I just want to just bring up, you know, the sun, sesquiquadrant Saturn going, whoa, there's a lot to look at, what we're doing. And then as Pat said, jumping into the fire, but the sun quintiles Mars, woof, 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 irresistible, eloquent. It's exactly 72 degrees when Ketanji Jackson Brown is brought into the Supreme Court. And it is what you said, you know, again, everywhere in the memosphere, a capacity to have the desirable, inspiring vision. And remember, Mars is through imagination, lost opportunities are regained. All the collapsing structures, the energy invested in them is now available for rededication to something more sane, which is what you're reporting on. And the for each one of us, to be influential in the way that you just guided, Pat, because the quintile says it's available, you know, it's neutrally available. It behooves us to animate the desirable, lest we leave it by default to the dementors. But things can happen really quickly. But it's a capacity to hold a true vision that you just gave us, for instance, and to be like a tuning fork in that it hums in everyone, going, oh, now that you said that, Pat, I see that thing. So we don't have to convince people, right? It's more like to guide to own autonomy, right? Going, I see that thing. Oh, I see how that could work. And that's, I never tire of bringing up Jeanine Benyus, founder of, you know, Biomimicry, which is a sine qua non. Because when people see her ingenious solutions to toxic problems and the solutions based on nature's elegant ingenuity, people are so moved. Again, it tosses parties and demo out, going, oh, that is so beautiful. You know, to redesign the front of the Japanese, you know, high-speed bullet train to be like a kingfisher bird entering water so that it enters and exits a tunnel with no disturbance in the field. And it's like, oh, that is so beautiful. Right? So that, Renaissance. You go. Yep.
Okay. There are train discussions in every locality around the country. If there has been an old train, an old track, people are talking right now on the governmental level, on all levels of government, about how to bring them back. How do we bring back trains? Who's going to power them? Should they be electric? These are decisions that are being made that everybody can have a say in. There are housing crises all over the place where there's places where there's just not enough housing and there's housing crises everywhere. So what's the difference if you're putting up an apartment block that's net zero versus not, right? So why not make it net zero? There's net zero construction. There's net zero housing. If you're at that community meeting or you're talking to your county council person, your city council person, your local mayor, they're making that decision. And I've found people very open because it's not anymore a pie in the sky. It's not like we don't know what net zero housing is. There are really good developers around the country who do it. It's not like we don't know what solar is. Solar's everywhere. So there are ways to make this happen that can be more creative today because there's just more things on the table. and you can have that power within your locality to make those changes. And I'm saying that in terms of the Supreme Court ruling, because again, when the Supreme Court rules against us, what it's saying is we have to get better organized and we have to get local. And that means we have to vote in people who are going to save our rights over our own bodies. We have to vote in people, and we have to influence and talk to talk to people who are going to build things the way we need them built, who aren't going to go out and get another 20 to 50 gas-powered, polluting buses, school buses, but they want the electric kind, so which are available today. So all of those pieces we can influence. I think the Supreme Court, again, from my standpoint, is saying, I don't want to deal with any of you, and I'm going to give it all back to the politicians to deal with, because we're just not going to have any response. They're giving up all their responsibility. They don't want to make decisions. They do want to make decisions against a woman's right to choose. They do want to make decisions against the environment. They do want to make decisions on behalf of corporate America. But the impact of that, and guns. Yeah, as many as you need, as many as you want. And I'll give you my own little thing about our friend, you know, Justice Thomas. The only thing he didn't mention in his list of, you know, private rights that he thought were on the table was Loving versus Virginia. He listed everything out, since Roe v. Wade, which has been the Supreme Court has discussed based on privacy. The only one he didn't mention was Loving versus Virginia, and that's interracial marriages.
Right, like, so he can be married to his dingbat.
The only one was Loving versus Virginia he didn't mention. Like, really? Really, buddy? So I'm not saying that they're trying to, I'm saying the effect of what they're doing is throwing all the authority back on the politicians, because they're giving up their right to have authority. And therefore, that's where we have to come in, and we have to step in. So this will be, I think, an unbelievably consequential election. Unbelievably consequential for that reason.
And so what are you, and just to say what you've been saying, you know, but unbelievably consequential, yes, we feel the crucial part of it. And I just want to put to one side and then hand it back to you is, part of our skill set, as some things are always true, but times when they're truer, is the power of the vision of desirable life and community, and the power of, ingenuity, and like it could all turn out well here, over here, as part of the strategy that we want to play with is a strategy, whether it's in one's own home or neighborhood or the Middle East or America, these contentious places, to start with the desirable vision, of community going, and here's the electric trains, and here's the thing, and here's the thing. Do we like that? Rather than how. The astro mythology would say, start with the vision and then avenues of how, avenues of practicality, and implementation open up that weren't visible at first. If we start with how and the compelling illusion of realism, then people go to war going, So I just want to put in our magic backpacks the power, the magnetizing power of the unifying desirable vision. Like, do we all like this? And people might go, oh, yes, but it's not realistic. Never mind. No, do we all like that? There, but we're going to start there because it's alive. And then just as a quirky thing, So the inauguration of the Supreme Court of Ketanji Jackson Brown, 22 plus Gemini overhead, which is three fledglings in a nest going, there's three things going on. Three additional justices would be, okay. I do just want to, as a vision, right? We don't know the practicality.
Yeah.
I like the number 13 quite
I'll
a
take
lot.
Four. Just yeah, we need four.
13 would, four, four, do we hear four? Do we
four
hear five?
And 13.
But
Yeah.
I like 13 Justices. I think it's good. Just memosphere. We're just putting that on the altar of desirable mystery. We know there's a lot of, you know, kind of whatever. It's like, no, we're just putting that there. That would be because there's a lot of sane talk about, you know, expanding the court, not packing the court, expanding FDR. And it's kind of got to go that way. And then in regards to what you were saying, you know, I sent you the. There's some wonderful things out and about that are surprising, disruptive, and rousing. And there was a YouTube of, you know, Texas guy. It's his persona. And you look and you don't know if he's a promise keeper. He's a, you know, he's a very Texas white bearded guy. But he starts off and he goes, can't you feel it? Can't you feel it under your feet? And it's like, where are we going? And he goes, the rise of democracy. He said, I don't know anybody who's feeling weak. Right, people are aroused to protect, you know, the Commonwealth and the thing, and then he goes on and he puts together a pretty great segmented piece, and it was like that was fun. I'm fond of Bo on YouTube again. He's a good commentator, good old boy. But mm-hmm. again, about, you know, expanding the court as a desirable thing, and in our waning minute-ish here, Pat, you know, so expanding the court, number 13, that'll be good. Engagement in this election, everybody, life is on the line. What would you woof? What are you bringing out of the fire that you would encourage people to do for this election or for right
the,
now?
The authoritarianism, authoritarianism that Trump started, that he fomented, could be stopped in 2022. It could end if the Democrats take the House back and they gain seats in the Senate. Because ultimately, again, authoritarian has to control a woman's body in order to gain power. So if we can codify Roe v. Wade, if we can do that, if we can gain seats in the Senate, if we can change the narrative that the Democrats are going to lose the House, they're going to lose the Senate. If we can change that narrative, the Republicans are going to have to change the way that they're working. So this is a very important election as far as authoritarianism goes, and as far as us pushing back on that weird, strange narrative that, you know, that's been running through. Our country right now. So I second thing is, I firmly believe when it comes to EPA thing, which is a horrible, horrible decision, I just want everybody to know that there are wonderful things going on all over the country that they can support and be part of. And us inhaling back our authority, being our own leaders, that's what's important right now, and stepping up to the plate, because the ball is given to all of us.
That's great. Woof, 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 you ally, woofy woman, Pat Ewing, Patricia Ewing, wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you to Kirsten Thomas, also wise woofy woman, board up. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof. Take all that Pat said to heart. Woof. Thank you.